Hi everyone, you're listening to Venturi's Voice. I'm your host, Andy Davis. This show is all about building a hub of relevant, insightful, and actionable business insights that can help drive greater performance and innovation. I've worked with several tech startups myself and know from experience that success is underpinned by a passion for continual learning and growth. So I'm grateful to have the opportunity to speak with our guests and learn from their stories. If you enjoy this podcast, you can download the free ebook featuring my personal podcast highlights from the past 2 years at www.venturi-group.com/podcast-ebook. If you're looking for more information on today's episode, just head over to the Venturi website to check out the show notes. Thanks for tuning in and enjoy the show. Today's guest is Robert Vardy, the squad data lead at Centrica. Robert, thank you so much for taking the time. Really appreciate you being on the show.
Yeah, hi.
It's awesome to talk to you. Like I was saying before we got started, it's always nice to do these on a Friday. You know, you kind of have a little bit of time to draw some perspective on the week. It's funny, you know, we get so busy now. We using different methodologies to try and, you know, make sure that we're always, you know, thinking clearly and have our kind of mindset on the vision that we're working towards. It's still quite difficult at times, seemingly, to kind of have a bit of reflective time. I don't know about you, but I certainly seem to struggle with that.
Yeah, I guess coming towards the end of the week, it's always a good time to kind of take a step back and, you know, reflect on what you achieved during the week and just in general. Yeah, I think, you know, when basically as an analogy I can think of is, you know, when you, for example, if your team works in an agile environment, you have this thing called sprints and you're just so, you know, busy and then sort of running and, you know, trying to focus on your next deliverable and all that. But sometimes it's good to sort of take a step back and evaluate what you've done in the past and how you could have done it better or whether you've done it fine and you just, you know, basically celebrate, you know, your success. But I guess what I learned through my career is you have to have the time off to kind of plan things ahead, and planning is not always about the future. As I said, it can be a reflection of what you've done, how you've done it, what you've achieved, and that can help you to sort of going forward.
Yeah.
So yeah, we are talking on a Friday afternoon, so I guess this is a good time, for example, to look back at your week, but I guess it's important to sort of find these times to have like checkpoints in a way, where you really just look back and, you know, evaluate again what and how you've done it, and that helps you moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, you mentioned working in like an agile way. And obviously, you know, I really enjoy that as well. I've actually been doing some training. We've had like a consultant coming in who's kind of scaling us up a little bit more so with like the agile ways and obviously running scrums and things like that. And it's been super useful. But yeah, it's even with that, because it's such an iterative process and it works really well with that regard. You know, obviously it's completely different to like a waterfall methodology where, you know, obviously it has proven it's inefficient, certainly when building things like software and such. But you know, the only thing that I've noticed with Agile is actually having that time to, you know, have the clarity on the vision, because although you are doing iterations to the process and that's working, you know, clearly you still almost need, you know, your team lead, or, you know, you just have the time to think yourself, to just remind us about the direction that you're going at times. So it doesn't seem to quite solve that. So you almost have to kind of build that within yourself, or, you know, have a great kind of lead or squad lead or kind of scrum master or product owner that will make, you know, remind you of the reason why we're working towards this.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, it's funny, when I started out with Agile and I was reading books about it, one of the authors said that he actually used Agile to write his book, which I think is a good example that Agile and, you know, using... So Agile is sort of the umbrella term for many methodologies and many techniques. Mm-hmm. And one of them is called Scrum, with the analogy from rugby. But really, I think what's important to understand is this whole Agile thinking is not only for tech or not only specifically for developing software. You can apply it in many things in your life. And it's a bit controversial that the Agile manifesto, the real Agile thinking, is that you shouldn't even follow a sort of rigorous process. Mm-hmm. So, for example, when we are talking about Scrum, and most people you ask about Scrum, they will tell you, oh, you have these sprints, they last 2 weeks, you have the story points, and many tech teams, they use the Fibonacci numbers as story point numbers and all that. But that is a process in itself, and you really have to adapt it to your own team and to your specific needs. So, for example, maybe my team, we are fine using Fibonacci numbers and story points and all that, but maybe in another team, they stick to t-shirt sizes, you know. Okay. Or maybe I would have sprints lasting 2 weeks, you would have sprints lasting 3 weeks, or even 4 days, or really depends on, you know, your sort of circumstances and your environments and requirements and the people you work with. So I think, yeah, it's important to understand that being agile is not that I just take a book and I just follow it and, oh, I'm agile. It's really your whole sort of thinking and your behavior, and that you adapt it to really your needs and your circumstances. And as I said, you can apply it to many things in life, not only building software and apps. You know, you can be agile in, I don't know, accounting or,
right,
or, you know, or many other areas, really.
Absolutely. When you started your kind of working life, or maybe even before that, was agile something you were aware of, or was it something that, you know, a skill that you developed, you know, maybe perhaps at the start of your career or even later on?
Yeah, so we are speaking in 2019, and I started out more than 10 years ago, and I haven't heard about Agile when I started out. It was more sort of in the last, I would say, last 5 or 6 years that it came, you know, to my side, at, you know, different places where I worked, and talking to different people in the industry. So yeah, it was sort of like a process that I had to like learn, really. Mm-hmm. But what really helped me is that I worked in a couple of companies where we actually used, you know, Agile and Scrum specifically. And I must tell you, I didn't like read many books on it. It was more like, I ended up working in teams who were already using Agile, or they started out and we were kind of doing it as we went along.
Yeah.
So as I said, there's different frameworks you can follow. So we definitely followed the Scrum framework. But yeah, we try to be agile in applying Agile, if you know what I mean. So
yeah.
You know, we had our sprints, and in the beginning of our conversation, we were talking about reflection. So in an agile environment, it's called retrospectives. So basically, you have a meeting after your sprint where team members have an open say of what was good, what went wrong about the sprint, you know, and the general direction, what could we do to sort of improve what we are doing, either tech-wise or just if we did something too slow, how could we do it faster? So we did all this.
Mm-hmm.
And really, personally, I learned it as I went along, really.
Yeah.
Which I think is actually a very good experience, as in, it's not only that, I mean, I can just tell you sort of my life before I did Agile and after. So before, I just felt it was all a bit unorganized in a way that, you know, requirements came in from the business or product managers, and you sort of have hard deadlines, mm-hmm. as in, like, you have a month to deliver something, and it wasn't spelled out as waterfall, but it is implied that it was waterfall, because you have 1 or 2 months or 3 months or 6 months to deliver something. And, you know, this typical situation when you go away for 6 months, you expect it to deliver something, and most of the time it's not because of you, but because there are no checkpoints on the way, and sort of it's not in the framework to have these checkpoints and evaluation along the way. Most of the time, what teams end up delivering just doesn't fit the purpose, what product expected.
Mm.
And came into Agile, you know, I really appreciated this quicker turnaround, which was around 2 or 3 weeks. But because at the end of each sprint, you're supposed to show what you've been working on, even if it just, you added a button to a web page.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end of the sprint, you demonstrate that you can click that button and something pops up or something happens. You delivered value.
Mm-hmm.
It might be as simple as a customer can now see their bills, or you know, I mean, a feature doesn't necessarily have to be, I don't know, build a brand new web app from scratch. It can be improvements to something that exists already. But because, if not other, but every 2 or 3 weeks, you feed back to the business, sort of in an agile environment, this whole sort of feedback mechanism, checkpointing, reflection is built into the framework, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So really, you know, when you look at 1 or 2 weeks' time, yes, maybe the team works on their own separate from product, but every now and then, usually at the end of every sprint, there must be some kind of collaboration and discussion. And when you look at a longer time frame, like 6 months or 1 year, when the project, you know, you had at least 10 occasions when you engaged with the business and we've done this, is this what you wanted? Do you like it? Do you want to change it? What do you want to change? So yeah, I think sort of agile as it was, it sort of revolutionized the industry, especially tech.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I totally appreciate the, you know, the kind of learning as you go along as well. I think that's kind of the best way to do it. We've had, you know, in my experience with it, we've had the consultation and the, you know, the PowerPoints and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, the only way you learn it is by just doing it. Well, at least that's me, you know. I would never was great in a classroom.
Me. Yeah. I'm the same. I'm more of a doer.
Yeah, I'm exactly the same. Let me just learn this by getting it wrong a few times and then figure that one out, you know. I think that's the best way to kind of do it. But yeah, I mean, it's just, once I think you get in the rhythm of doing it, it's almost as if you kind of wonder to yourself, you know, how I ever got anything done prior. You know, it's really interesting, isn't it? You know, you kind of just making life hard for yourself in a lot of ways. So it's it's very interesting. And I think, you know, the culture around that environment and that team and holding the accountability, I think for me that, like, is as much as, you know, the actual getting stuff done, the most compelling bit, because I felt that just working in a slightly different way, a little bit more structured manner, you know, the accountability being like a big part of it as well. It for me, it actually really does revolutionize the culture as well and the team dynamics. And, you know, a great example is, you know, having those harder conversations. You know, if you feel someone or something isn't going well, isn't going to plan, the project's not being done.
Exactly.
You know, when you just are iterating throughout, it never comes to a head. if you know what I mean. You know, you don't end up having like, oh, we haven't caught up, and then a month later it's like, oh my god, this has gone wrong, and then it ends up being super heated. It's like, you know, if you're kind of constantly catching up, you know, and constantly, you know, holding people accountable for stuff, it becomes a more comfortable conversation to have, which in turn is essentially more productive.
Yeah, and again, because it's built into the sort of methodology. And like with Agile, again, we're talking about like daily stand-ups, which, well, actually at the moment with my team, we don't actually do it every day.
Mm-hmm.
We do it every other day. But basically, because the framework is there for your benefit to have these little checkpoints, and every stand-up is a kind of mini retrospective, mm-hmm. as in you only look back what happened yesterday or the last 2 days, but you evaluate it on a micro level, like, oh, I'm struggling with this, actually, would you mind helping me out? Or, oh, everything's going fine, I can finish my ticket and I'm going to start the next one today. Well, you know, and it's built into it. And as you just said, quite rightly, because you just have these conversations about your work, and because we have an end goal in the end of this sprint, like we have to deliver that button, we will bring up difficult questions or questions that would have been difficult to discuss otherwise. But because you're in this agile sort of delivery mode, it's your benefit not to kind of shy away and, you know, just ask those questions. And the answer might be, it's quite difficult to do, or we can't do it now. And then, you know, the answer in a waterfall system, the answer would be, oh my God, that's not acceptable, and, you know, put pressure on everyone. But in an agile environment, it's perfectly okay to figure out issues like as you go along. But the idea is that you can sort of deviate away from your original plan in order to still achieve what you wanted to achieve. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. So, yeah. And I think it's incredible the cultural impact that something like that has.
And I can tell you, like since I'm using, you know, agile at work, I'm using, well, not agile, but I'm using sort of carts and, well, I'm using Trello, I can tell you. In my personal life, you know, obviously as a software engineer, I'm not only writing code in the office, you know, like sometimes I look into stuff, you know, outside of working hours and yeah, just really what I'd like to do, or maybe write a blog article or anything. So yeah, I have my Trello board and, you know, just have my tickets just for myself, so it's easy to see what I'm supposed to do. And, you know, and then when I have maybe 3-2 hours, then, oh, so what's my next task? So really, it changed my mindset in a way. And I hope, you know, this helps all of us to be more efficient as well.
Absolutely, yeah. I think so. Yeah, it's interesting. I think my girlfriend's going to find it interesting when I pull up the Trello board to handle all of our domestic tasks. I wonder how she'll react to that.
Well, that's bad. There you go.
I don't know. I mean, that one's too big. So I'll let you, I'll get you, I'll update you next week on that one, on how that's received. But yeah, it's good, definitely. You know, obviously you're squad lead now.
Yeah.
You know, how was that kind of transition from, you know, being, you know, a developer, being involved in the scrums, but not necessarily like leading the scrums, I suppose, to, you know, actually now leading them? You know, how have you kind of enjoyed the process, you know, as you kind of progressed and become more senior to the point that you are now? What have been some of the sort of, you feel the kind of, no, I wouldn't want to say trickiest, but, you know, most significant changes to the responsibilities?
So, well, the main responsibility that I have now as a data lead is really that I have to make sure that those difficult questions are asked.
Mm-hmm.
While when I was on the other side of the line, if I can say, it was sort of up to me. And I always try to sort of say things, you know. I mean, I was never a person who just likes to sit in the corner and like, oh, I'm working and like, sort of leave me alone. I mean, I was always the one, you know, if something didn't work or I had difficulties, I always mentioned it. And, you know, I wasn't shy, like asking for help or anything like that. But now as a team lead, or more specifically data lead, I just have to make sure if I feel anyone on a stand up or in any of our collaboration or meetings, you know, they are a bit withdrawn, mm-hmm. just to make them feel comfortable enough that they don't have to sort of go silent. And, you know, like, even if, you know, what they're going to say is, it doesn't work, or I have a difficulty with this or that, mm-hmm. Just make them feel it's okay, it's not a problem, but we have to know in order to progress. Mm-hmm. I can talk about, you know, the technicalities, as in basically we are, if I can say, like a truly agile team, as in there's no set roles. So if you hit up any Scrum book, it will tell you that every team needs a Scrum Master who's responsible sort of for the procedure, and that all the ceremonies, as in daily stand-ups, sprint planning, retrospective, they are all held. And you have the product owner, mm-hmm. Which is usually like a product manager. Mm-hmm. But in our team, we haven't got a dedicated like Scrum Master. It's sort of all of us.
Right.
So that's why I would say, you know, we are a truly agile team. As it, what I was telling you in the beginning, that being agile is not necessarily you get a book and you do exactly what the book tells you. You know, it's sort of adapted to your needs. Mm-hmm. So I used to work in teams when we had a dedicated Scrum Master. So it really goes by, you know, team size and sort of, you know, how the company works or the department where you are, how other teams work and all that. But I can tell you now at the moment, sort of that role is not defined. But for example, when I organize, you know, sprint planning and all that, I just have to make sure we have sort of the technical tickets with enough details. So when we sit down, we're not going to go, oh, what does this ticket mean? Mm-hmm. So I'm sort of refining the requirements from product managers as much as I can on the technical level. So, you know, when we have a discussion around each deliverable, each ticket, then we more or less understand what is it about. Yeah. And then we can just work out the details.
Absolutely.
So yeah, I'm doing that. But in terms of the culture, I can see, yeah, my role has changed, as I told you, that I just have to be the one sort of make sure that, you know, we discuss, you know, as much relevant stuff as required in order to deliver stuff. And simply just if we decided we're going to deliver this or that feature by the end of the sprint and you raise expectations, then you should be able to deliver it to the best of your knowledge. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that can always be complications, difficulties, maybe you built your solutions, but you're not able to access to a data source and you find it out as you go. So that's okay. But the earlier you find out, the better. Mm-hmm. And this is how you ensure that this development cycle is sort of an ongoing thing. So every sprint, in our case, every 2 weeks, we deliver something new. Mm-hmm. And again, if you look at 1 week time or 10 days, maybe there's no new features coming in. But when you look at a typical waterfall time span, which is like 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, in an agile environment, we are able to deliver 10 features in that 6 months.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Instead of waiting around, you know, and, oh, we're going to deliver these 5 features and come the end of the 6 months period and, oh, actually, we only got 2 done, you know. Yeah. So.
Absolutely, yeah. So, yeah. It's really revolutionized, obviously, you know, technical teams. I don't think there's any kind of question about that. You know, from your personal perspective and your kind of own ambitions as well, you know, obviously you've already made, you know, such progress throughout your career now. What's the kind of vision and motivations for you on a personal level, like moving forward? You know, how do you kind of approach goal setting?
Yeah, within our team or for myself?
Yeah, for yourself, yeah.
Well, with me, I think it comes from kind of what interests me.
Mm-hmm.
But I can tell you, I started out nowhere near data. Yeah. I used to be a web developer. I used to build basically websites and apps.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this sort of journey throughout my career when I learned about the importance of data. Actually, talking about it, it's a little bit funny because what we are doing is called information technology.
Yeah.
And I appreciated the technology side for years, building apps, websites, and all that, but I didn't really even think about information. And now we're in the age of obviously big data and machine learning, AI, and all that, where I guess not only tech people, but also people in business and all sorts of disciplines, now they appreciate the information bit. So yeah, it was maybe around the same time when I learned about Agile, about 5 or 6 years ago, when I started working with big data.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, with all the sort of typical technologies, I would say, like Hadoop. Then I went into Spark later on. You know, business intelligence reporting and data warehousing and all that. And I think that was the path when, well, I appreciated, you know, what I'm doing is I can sort of make sense of, I wouldn't say in my case, enormous amount of data, but certainly I could make sense of something that nobody else could do it, if you know what I mean. Simply because, you know, legacy tools were just not capable of processing, I don't know, hundreds of gigabytes or terabytes of data.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we delivered, you know, business intelligence reports and all that, to the business and they found it really useful, and our real business decisions were taken based on my work.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that was the moment when I realized that, you know, understanding data and sort of extracting those key components that we can call it information.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really useful.
Yeah.
And
you felt, did you feel kind of fulfilled from that, you know, the fact that
and it was quite so different to what I used to do before that, because as I told you, I used to build websites where, well, you know, there were buttons to click and forms to fill in and, you know, and pictures popping up and all that. And suddenly I went from that sort of front-endy word into more sort of the word where you see sort of database records and, you know, code everywhere and there's not much visual. But the importance of that is significant.
Mm-hmm.
So that was obviously, you know, new to me, but I could see the importance of, you know, what me and the team and where I used to work, what we achieved and how we could really help the business. And then actually I went back to university and I did a master's in data analytics. That was at Birkbeck College, University of London.
Yeah.
And basically, I was new to machine learning and natural language processing and all that. And given my background by that time in big data, I mean, I knew how to process, you know, significant amount of data. I'm always a bit cautious saying, you know, like enormous data, because in many situations, you really not crunching through petabytes of data, as you know, a lot of people say, you know, big companies, you know, I mean, yes, but even if you're just talking about, you know, like significant amount of data, which can be, you know, few hundred gigabytes of data or something, I mean, that is a challenge usually, and I knew how to do that. But at university I learned about sort of the next level, if I can say, but it's not only just about processing that data and coming from 100 million records into 10, but useful record, as in like a summary, but how to build software that can learn from that initial data. So that was another sort of eye-opening to me. And I can tell you, I expected a lot. I don't want to simplify it, but what I'm trying to say is basically machine learning is based on statistics.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very interesting to understand that, you know, good statistics can get you quite far.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the machine learning principles are based on stats. And actually, they are not new. I mean, most of the machine learning and neural networks, deep learning stuff that you hear about a lot. I mean, it's a lot newer, but actually most of the stuff that we call machine learning, which is really the official name, if I can say, is statistical learning. So a lot of the statistical learning stuff actually was researched like 100 years ago or before the war.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually not that new. It just now that we have the computing capacity to apply it on large data sets,
mm-hmm.
then now we can combine statistical learning that was researched 70, 80, 100 years ago. We can combine it with big data.
Yeah.
So that was very interesting to understand and learn about. And obviously now we are beyond sort of statistical learning, as in, you know, we are in like deep learning territory.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Google DeepMind and AlphaGo and all this stuff is real, which is, I guess, the next level where, so basically machine learning, you have a mathematical function, mm-hmm. that describes, you know, like a formula that given an input, mm-hmm. data set, you know, you can apply that function to it. And with deep learning, you don't even know what the function is, and the computer figures out what that function is based on the data you feed it in. So yeah, I guess, and actually I've got friends who do research in, I don't want to get the exact name of it wrong, but what it is, it's basically a neural network that builds an other neural network, mm-hmm. if you know what I mean.
Absolutely.
So yeah. We came from applying a mathematical function on a data set, mm-hmm. and then with machine learning, I can figure out the parameters to that function. With neural networks, you could generate that function. And nowadays we have neural networks that generate neural networks that come up with a function that come up with the parameters to that function. You know what I mean?
Oh my God. Yeah. Well, it's fascinating. I mean, we had a guy on the show, he was talking about four-dimensional databases. So it was that was fascinating, and I was really struggling to hold thought with that conversation because he was going way too technical.
I guess it all becomes just so abstract after a point. But I think if I told you about these neural networks that can generate another network, obviously it's quite abstract and quite complex. But if you understand where it all came from, I think that helps a lot.
Yeah,
because absolutely. Then suddenly it will start to sort of. And just going back to your original question, like, what motivates me? So personally, I'm still very interested in where all this is heading.
Yeah.
Actually, one specific area I'm really interested in is natural language processing.
Mm-hmm.
We all know, it's in our mobile phones these days, and, Alexa and Google Home, and you can talk to your computers these days. But I still think a lot of this stuff that's out there is quite basic.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's an algorithm today that could sort of generate a conversation like the one we have now.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see, this is my sort of personal interest. I can see a lot of potential in natural language processing. And what was very interesting to me is there's so many approaches and algorithms that are language agnostic.
Mm-hmm.
So really, it doesn't matter if it's English or Chinese or whatever. There's certain patterns that the machine can learn. And then it's almost, it doesn't matter what language is the input.
Yeah.
And sort of make sense of it. So my personal interest is in data, and
it's all about, I guess it's all about.
I was going to say, all this machine learning and see where it's heading. There's still changes in the way data can be processed. So when we're talking about Hadoop, for example, obviously it's not a new thing anymore. It's quite old, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And you have technologies built on top of it, like Spark or Flink. But there's new technologies coming up, either based on that or for example, let me give you an example. I'm working with Kafka in the last couple of years, which is technically speaking, it's a message log, but probably it's more familiar to many people if I say it's a more efficient message queue.
Mm-hmm.
That is used in streaming data analytics. So Kafka is a great example that even the way we process data is evolving, and there are always new tools and new technologies out there.
Mate, it's I think it's quite clear that the motivations for you are just about pure interest and passion for the subject, and the direction with where things are going. And I think that in itself is super cool, because I just think that there's so many people who I think are perhaps misled by their motivations. And I really like how simple you keep things, as far as, I've just pursued things that I've been fascinated by. Mm. And I think it's a great lesson. So thanks for sharing.
Thank you.
Yeah. Robert, sorry, we'll leave it here, mate. I think we're about 40 minutes in. It was awesome talking with you, mate. Thank you so much.
Nice. Thanks.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to check out more of Venturi's voice, but you're unsure where to begin, you can find my recommended top 12 episodes at venturi-group.com/podcast-ebook. See you next time.